Hi, I'm Katie Lauer, and I'd like to tell you one of my memories from the hills of home about a car trip down along the Ohio River. On Highway 52, going east from Cincinnati, you pass the dun-colored horse stables at River Downs, looking like tracks of rabbit warrens, thick with mud. A dead, discarded Christmas tree has been abandoned in a field off the highway, along with tattered cardboard signs saying Trump Country. It's hard not to take it personally, my friend Nikki says, laughing at the ugly stretch of rusted-out scenery, but we are taking a drive today determined to be in a lighthearted mood. For one thing, we are riding in style in Nikki's dark plum Cadillac, the one he bought when he was working in Hollywood in big-time show business. Since he moved back to Ohio a couple of years ago, the car seems a little frivolous, but it is so comfortable. We could ride forever like a male-female version of Thelma and Louise. I turn the car stereo up, Ella Fitzgerald singing George Gershwin, and we drive on past the dreariness, past the silos at Moscow, churning out clouds of white smoke and a tattered Confederate flag nailed to the corner of a billboard. When the Ohio River comes into view, it is shining, metallic, its current standing out on the surface of the water like the ruffles on an evening gown. Two boys stand on the bank, skipping stones across the water, their small faces and hands red and chapped from the biting wind. On this winter's day, the sun hits the water just right to make it sparkle and dance. Tree trunks lean slightly towards the current as we drive alongside on Route 52. It is early spring, but it is cold. A long, slow barge comes into view, floating majestically. Nikki laughs and says that barges offend him. He has lived in California for so long he is put off by anything slow and deliberate. Get out of my way, Nikki says, flinging his head back, just like Franklin D. Roosevelt, as we pass a mail pouch tobacco barn. Like Nikki, I have lived close to the Ohio River for most of my life. I could see it from the window of the first apartment I lived in when I came to Cincinnati in 1966, and I suspect the river itself has become part of my DNA. So many things I've done have been directly related to it. In fact, it is hard to imagine anything important happening in Cincinnati without the Ohio River as a backdrop. Back in the days when settlers drifted down the Erie Canal from New England farms with their lives loaded onto wagons, the Ohio River was their goal. The first Europeans to see the river were French explorers in birch bark canoes who called it La Belle Rivière, beautiful river, as they paddled past the rich countryside loaded with game. It was much later that the settlers came. Around Pittsburgh, they strapped everything they owned, including the parlor piano, on flatboats and let the river carry them into Ohio. It was a little like taking a drop on a roller coaster, braving the currents and the whitewater rapids. The ones who survived it got oxen to pull the flatboats on dry land, or else simply bought teams of horses and covered wagons to get to Cincinnati. Those who could afford it bought passage on the gaily painted steamboats sailing up and down the river. Some were headed for St. Louis, some for California, others were gone prospecting for gold. Nikki and I stopped at the Front Street Cafe in New Richmond and had a cup of coffee. It was pleasant to sit in the small cafe and watch the Ohio out of the large window. Although it was cold, some brave souls wearing heavy coats sat outside on benches built for just such viewing. There was a light lift of steam where the warmer water met the cold air. In the deep purple Cadillac again, we headed for Point Pleasant and were rewarded with a historical marker that said President Grant's birthplace. And smelling adventure, we turned in there, hoping to see historic rooms, museums, full of historic things from Grant's boyhood. Naturally, it was closed. Open from 1 till 4 p.m., the sign said, but even though it was only 2 p.m., we were out of luck. We drove around the circle in the small town to Grant's schoolhouse, but that too was closed. On to Ripley, we shouted, fist to the sky. Ripley, the tobacco capital of Ohio, home of the Ohio Tobacco Festival. I had played at that first Brown County Bluegrass Festival many years before and was awed with the demonstrations of farm machinery, both contemporary and antique. I saw a gas-operated threshing machine, an old-time tractor pull, all the behemoths looking like they had just come from a Thomas Hardy novel with a heroine like Tess D'Urberville peeking out of the fairground bleachers. Nikki and I were still listening to the radio in the Cadillac and prowling down the back roads of little towns like Ripley and Higginsport. All these villages were about the same size, population 1,600, stone houses lining the street, large maple trees, the branches bare and colorless now. In the late winter, the trees are tapped for maple syrup. Waiting patiently, the syrup harvesters watch the viscous liquid drip into buckets at a maddeningly slow pace. The river is more than an address. It is a way of life. Years ago, I was engaged to marry a young man from Higginsport. His father had pitched on the town softball team, and Tom and his family had lived over the post office. Tom loved the river and learned to swim holding on to the tail of his collie dog, Rex. After he was grown, Tom still had a great dog paddle stroke, his head out of the water. He wore glasses while he swam, his arms and legs paddling stoutly underneath the surface of the water. For a few charmed years, Tom and I hiked the Nature Center in Hillsboro in the day with our dog, Hoosier. Nights we played with an old-time jazz band on the patio at Arnold's with the stars overhead. On a hot summer day in 1989, Tom was killed instantly by a bolt of lightning at Kings Island after a gig. He was buried in his family's plot in the cemetery in Georgetown. The funeral was crowded, and as such things can be, almost festive. Most of the Rivertown people were there, the women dressed in wide-brimmed straw hats and flowered silk dresses. Musicians and friends from Cincinnati came as well, dressed a little more casually. After that, on Sundays, I would drive to Georgetown to sit with Tom's widowed father, Perry Cahall. I'd watch a baseball game with him, talk to him about music. He had been a tuba player. Brown County is full of Cahalls and Tarbells. And Jim Tarbell tells a story I may have told before. At our age, Jim and I are apt to repeat stories, though we enjoy them just as much the second time around. In one branch of the family, several men with the name of Perry were so easily confused that they had to be given nicknames. Hog Perry raised pigs. Sheriff Perry tended to the law, and that left Jerry Perry, about whom I know nothing at all. Sheriff Perry was Jim Tarbell's great-grandfather, and it may have been that Hog Perry was Tom's great-grandfather. He and Jim were cousins. In any case, one day Hog Perry drove his pigs down to the river around Georgetown and started walking home with a fat purse full of silver. He was set upon by robbers who killed him and stole his money. Jim also swears that Val Lewis in Georgetown insists Sheriff Perry's ghost is still on the third floor of the courthouse and haunts the inhabitants to this day. He even has a romantic riverboat pilot ancestor named William Tarbell, who came here by way of the West Indies, then on up through New Orleans to the Ohio River Valley. He became a riverboat captain, got a job on a steamboat, stopped one day to save a young woman from a flood, and married her. Eventually, someone started noticing the Ohio River for the asset it was and starting in 1988, Cincinnati decided to produce an event dedicated to the river and the steamboats. It was called Tall Stacks, and Rick Grywe recruited me to work on the entertainment committee. I found a magician in Atlanta who did an old-fashioned act. He sawed his wife in half by gaslight. I found actors to play Abraham Lincoln and Frederick Douglass, and string bands to play Bonnie Blue Flag and Lorena. It became a popular celebration, and I watched steamboats of all sizes float into the harbor from home ports as far away as California. After that, every 4 years in October through 2006, the Cincinnati and Northern Kentucky riverboats were transformed into another century, another time, and women dressed in antebellum gowns strolled from boat to boat while banjos and fiddles played Stephen Foster songs. All of it filled the air like a dream, and for those 4 days, Cincinnatians worshiped the river, took countless prize-winning pictures of it, and memorized statistics about the old days of steamboat races and colorful steamboat captains. Men in khaki pants and walking shoes with binoculars around their neck hiked for blocks just to see the sun rise on the river. The shanty towns and yachts that had floated up for the event slipped out of their watery parking places for an early unobstructed view of the bend in the Ohio. I think there were 9 or 10 steamboats that first year from Minneapolis, St. Louis, and of course the Belle of Louisville, arch rival of Cincinnati's Delta Queen. The event was spread over the riverbanks in Cincinnati and northern Kentucky, and my bluegrass band ended up playing in the rain under a yellow tent with 10 other musicians who were getting in out of the rain as well. We took seats in the tent and began to play old-time fiddle tunes and equally old bluegrass songs, mostly led by John Hartford, who became the unequivocal king of Tall Stacks that first year. In his Victorian shirt and vest, his string tie, and his bowler hat, he tap danced through the audience's heart. He had written dozens of river songs, played the fiddle and the banjo, and could call out the names of the steamboats with his back turned to them just by listening to their whistles. I wondered how many celebrations had been held on this ancient ground over the past years. I felt certain there had been many extravaganzas, many feasts and festivals, even before the Europeans immigrated here. For a minute, I was gratifyingly young. As old as I sometimes felt, the river was older. Of course, the big city was magic and color and full of the noise of life, but the little towns Nikki and I had visited this afternoon were the quiet collapsing of time, the glue for our stability, the seed for our future achievement. Nikki and I crossed the Ohio River and came home on Route 8 in Kentucky. Nick gunned the engine of the purple Cadillac, and we were headed west, back home, while streaks of moonlight began to float from the sky. I'm Katie Lauer. Thanks for listening to this memory from the hills of home.